When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Hannah, and I am voice noting this intro because I know we recorded one. I know we did, but it is a month later, and can I find it? No, I cannot. Can I be bothered to search across two different laptops that we had to use for this recording after we lost multiple files? No, I am not. So you just get me for the final ever episode of season 6. I've forgotten everything about this intro. This is a Drunken Harry Potter podcast. We're reminiscing on our favourite childhood book, but this time with added alcohol and cynicism. And in today's episode, we are listening to your howlers. This is our listener phone-in episode, and we are listening to everything you had to say about season 6 of this podcast, your thoughts on the Half-Blood Prince, your theories, things you wanted to ask us. So grab a glass of your favourite alcoholic beverage and join us on this drunken, reminiscent journey.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to the final episode of season 6. How are you?
Same as I was in the episode we may or may not have recorded, but now more stressed.
Great.
Also very warm.
You did put a jumper on.
Yeah, but it's that or you'll see my nipples. Well, they'll see my nipples. So
they probably would like that.
They would, but I'm not putting that out there for free.
Fair enough. Welcome to the second ever, third ever, Howler episode.
I've kind of forgotten how we do these. We forgot that this was a thing at all.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, we got one episode left. Nope. And then, nope. There's a Howler episode, and here it is. A Howler episode is essentially our word for a listener phone-in episode. So you get to share your thoughts with us. We've been asking for your thoughts. They're here. We're going to listen. We're going to react. We're going to listen to all your beautiful voices, and I'm really excited.
Yay!
First, we've got the normal top of episode stuff. Do you want to do alcohol or Patreons?
Patrons.
Patrons. So, a Danish-sized thank you to Dan Schiella.
A maximum-sized thank you to Max.
A Tigger size thank you to Tyler.
An enormous thank you to Erica.
A arduous size thank you to Ardent, who is a new producer level Patreon.
A Lampoon size thank you to Lily.
A Leamington Spa size thank you to Lucy.
A sophisticated thank you to Sophie.
A aromatic size thank you to Andra.
An anatomic size thank you to Ashling, a producer level patron.
And a kale size thank you to Kaylee, who has upgraded their pledge.
What are we drinking today? I actually don't know.
We are drinking two different types of foreign red wine.
Oh.
Yep. Right. So this, I believe, is from Valentina. Now, I have a bit of confession with this that I hope doesn't need to be a confession. As I mentioned in the last episode, which hopefully has saved and you've heard it, we got given a lot of stuff within a 1 month period with a lot of separate notes, emails and DMs that I then attempted to piece together. And this is the one where I was like, well, these two have to go together because it's my last remaining bottle of alcohol and my last note. The bottle has nothing on that I can read and it's in Cyrillic, so I can't. I tried to Google lens it. So I was like, these two have to go together. What I'm now starting to doubt is that this is Terranino, a liquor made from Turan, a red wine. That's not...
It's
I
clear.
Thought this would come
it's
out red.
It's in blue glasses, but the liquid's
the
clear.
The liquid is clear.
Thing is, it smells really strongly of red wine. So I feel like this is correct.
It was the last bottle and the last note, so...
The thing is, it doesn't say it's red wine. It says it's a liquor made from red wine.
It does say that.
Maybe there's some kind of distilling that gets rid of the colour, but sniff it. It smells like red wine.
Actually, you're right. It does.
It really does. So I think it's correct. But apologies if it isn't.
I'm so sorry.
Let us know the answer to the mystery and yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's not too bad. Oh. It's one of those weird ones where the first sip is the worst and then it gets better. Nope, got worse again.
It's like burning my tongue. Is it burning your tongue?
No, it's burning here.
Well, that's disgusting.
Cheers. I don't even know what country it's from.
The aftertaste is quite nice, but the initial and middle taste is horrid.
Black Sea Gold. Do you remember we used to drink nice things? Do you remember that time?
Is your tongue burning?
No. Are you allergic to it?
I'm genuinely wondering that. Horrid, thank you.
I'm going to go in alphabetical order because that's how they're organised in the file. So we are starting off with Dana.
Hello, everybody. First of all, girls, I love your podcast. I love listening to it. I'm having very much fun with every episode. And yeah, I wanted to talk about episode 107, end of January. I actually, maybe you recall, I spammed you with this topic already. And I don't know who of you two answered me, but you told me I should send an audio to the whole Howler episode.
Oh, wow.
Because the topic is pretty interesting. And it's about Slughorn acting as if he doesn't know about Horcruxes when Harry was asking him, and the motivation which could be behind that. Because Charlie, of course, was talking about that Slughorn obviously didn't knew what would happen, that Tom would turn that evil, and that it wouldn't be wise to not talk about Horcruxes with him. And of course, I think we all would agree that theoretically admitting to the mistake would be the wisest thing to do, of course. But then, as Hannah said, and it's actually a pretty psychologist topic, and I'm a psychologist, so it's pretty interesting for me, and I hope you all can follow what I'm trying to explain. Basically, it's much about the concept of cognitive dissonance, which mental conflict that occurs when your beliefs don't line up with your actions. And the thing is, Slughorn was trying to reassure himself that nothing is happening, that he didn't do a grave mistake when Voldemort rose to power, because if he would have admitted that he made a mistake, that would have been very, very self-esteem harming. And normally we humans try to protect our self-esteem, sometimes at any cost, sometimes it's not wise, as it is shown in this case. So we are trying to reduce cognitive dissonance by interpreting the informations we are getting in our around us, like in this case, the rise of the power of Voldy, by fitting the belief, it's not my fault, best. So we're trying to interpret, or better said, Slughorn is trying to interpret the information he's getting around him, so it's not self-esteem harming. There must be another explanation. It's surely not my fault, blah, 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 blah. And when he realized it, that he did contribute to Voldy's rise by telling him information, it's kind of too late. He fucked up in telling him and tried to ignore the topic even more so he's not crushed by guilt and shame. So he's going basically in denial, and we're generally trying to avoid having too much negative emotions. And sometimes we're trying to avoid negative emotions, even though it causes more problems in the long run. There are many, many examples for that in our daily life. And I think that's what Slughorn is doing in the end. Mm. So, like you said, both said, he's a morally grey character and he's definitely worrying much about his reputation. his values are more status and pride, more than telling the truth and helping them succeed the good side. And the values of status and pride are, of course, fitting for a Slytherin. Not that every Slytherin would act like this, of course. But he's a pretty interesting and pretty complex character, especially from a psychologist view. Anyway, love the podcast. And yeah, greetings from Germany.
Thank you.
I hope you understood what I was trying to explain. And yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, your English is amazing.
God, it's great. I was about to say, she said hello from Germany. I was going to be like, bonjour, like, no, guten Tag.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear from someone actually qualified to think that that's feasible.
Yeah.
Like, psychologically, because it's always kind of grated on me. But hearing, and like the point about cognitive dissonance as well is really good.
Yeah, it's, I think that it's not just that Slughorn is a morally grey character, he's a much more grown up character, like a more adult written character, because I think cognitive dissonance isn't just something that morally grey characters experience, or cognitive dissonance is something that we all experience at some point or another. At some point your inner beliefs are not going to match up with your actions for whatever reason.
Unless humans, you're me, because I'm perfect.
Unless you're you, because you're perfect. And as humans we try to bury that because we always want to believe the best in ourselves, essentially. So
then why does my brain constantly be like, you're the worst, I hate you, you're awful, blah.
See, you say you're the worst, I hate you, but out loud you always say, I'm perfect, I've never done a thing wrong. Cognitive dissonance. Thank you, Dana, that was great. Next we have a written one from Danielle. So Danielle says, I just listened to the Lightning Struck Tower episode and you guys were wondering why Dumbledore flew in the air when Snape cast Avada Kedavra. Oh my god, my laptop is like, could
Avoodle you Kedouvel.
Fucking update this, fucking update that. I do love the idea of Dumbledore just yeeting himself over the edge of the drama, but my headcanon is that because Snape was so conflicted, when Harry tried to crucio Bellatrix in Order of the Phoenix, it knocked her off her feet but didn't work because you have to mean it, whatever she said. In the same vein, Snape had enough power behind it for the spell to work, but I think because his heart wasn't fully in it, it wasn't the ideal casting where the person just drops dead. I was very into the HP forums between books 6 and 7, and the fact that Dumbledore flew into the air was like the crux of my Snape was a good guy argument. Except I know now that being a sad incel that couldn't get over a girl isn't really good guy material, but you get the point. I was a little annoyed that JKR never addressed it in book 7, after all this time of making such a big deal about how the killing curse usually works. Anyway, love the show, and I'm so excited to be finally almost caught up enough to write in. You guys have really helped me process my feelings around the series and JKR and all the shittiness there. Can't wait to see what you do after you finish book 7.
Aww.
That's so nice, Danielle.
That's really...
Thank you.
I fucking love that theory.
I adore that theory. That's fab. I never would have crossed my mind. But you're right, because even Moody says in book 4, you could all get your wands out now and try Avada Kedavra, and the worst I'd get is a nosebleed, which implies that without the right casting intent, it can still have an effect.
Which leads to the fascinating possibility that Snape didn't actually kill him with Avada Kedavra, that he was just launched out the window and it was the drop that killed him.
And it was the impact that killed him.
Wow.
I really, really, really like that theory.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, this is why we do this episode.
Yeah.
Jesus
you
Christ.
You guys should be running the podcast.
I like how I'm like, I've got nothing else to say. Perfect theory. Thank you.
10 out of 10. Thank
10
you.
10 out of 10. Dorka is next.
Woo! Hi, Dorka.
Hi, Dorka.
Hi, Charlie and Hannah. It's Dorka here. Thank you so much for the podcast and your deep dive into my favorite book of the series. I have a question to you. And my question is that if you would have one plot line in Half-Blood Prince that you would like to change, maybe erase it completely, that wouldn't be a big plot line, so therefore it wouldn't change book 7 and anything beyond this book, what would that be? I know you talked a lot about, for example, the potion that Merope uses, and that's sort of its presentation as a rape drug, as a kind of a really heavy-handed metaphor that Rowling didn't do well. So maybe that's something that you would like to change, but basically That's my question. If there's anything that you would like to change or would have liked to present it differently in this book, what would that be? Thank you so much for the podcast. Love you guys.
Aww, thank you. I think the first thing that came to mind for me was a lot of like the lavender plot because there's so much misogyny in it.
Yeah.
So much. And it definitely could be taken out of the plot and nothing of consequence would really change.
And I think you could even leave lavender in but remove, the surrounding misogyny, because I don't dislike lavender being in there. I actually think it's better that each of the trio have some sort of relationship before they get with their final partners. But yeah, the misogyny. The problem with this question is because I've just watched the film.
Oh yeah,
I can't. Dorka just mentioned Merope, and I'm like, fuck yeah, Merope's in this book. I've completely forgotten stuff like that.
I think for me, definitely lavender. I think
is the monster a plot point? Can I remove the monster?
Yes,
I'm removing the monster.
I think I am mildly allergic to something in this. Like, you know, when you eat pineapple and your tongue kind of, it's like an extreme version of that.
Oh no,
it's very weird.
Well, when we're halfway through, you can have
another until
drink.
Then keep poisoning yourself.
Keep poisoning yourself.
I will.
I don't know whether I would remove
the monster,
the Merope stuff. I probably wouldn't remove it. I'd want it handled better. I'm not actually angry at its presentation in there, because I don't believe that bad things should be in books, because they should. How else do we discuss things? It's more the conversation around them and the presentation of them that,
absolutely.
I would alter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm removing the monster. This next one is from Eleanor.
I just wanted to say I love the podcast. Also, I was one of the things I wanted to ask about is, like, I get Snape being a double agent and all that, but I just don't quite understand why he had to kill Dumbledore to prove his loyalty to the Death Eaters. Because once he killed Dumbledore and Harry saw it, none of the rest of the Order of the Phoenix trusted him anyway, so they wouldn't have trusted any information he got. So obviously he knows about Harry having to die and all that sort of stuff, but I just feel like it wasn't that useful, him having to prove his loyalty.
I think for me it was always more about saving Draco's innocence.
Yeah.
And the fact that it would solidify him in Voldemort's mind.
Yeah, I think that it
was like a benefit.
I think at some point Dumbledore and Snape were aware a double or triple agent can't last forever. At one point you have to fully pretend to go to one side or the other, because once a certain threshold of war is crossed, you can't keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
So A, that was going to happen at some point. It may as well be in his control. And B, Dumbledore didn't want Draco to do that act. And C, Dumbledore was going to die anyway.
Yeah.
So it's again about regaining control. It was just all three of those circumstances coming together in a package that meant that Snape would never not trust Dumbledore. I think where the...
That Snape would never not trust Dumbledore.
What did I say?
Does that count as a shot?
What did I mean to say?
I don't know. I think it counts as a shot.
I think it probably does. I'll do it when
off
I'm...
your pop.
Can I do it when I next get up?
Yeah, fine.
Please, I'm surrounded by wires. There's so much around me. I'll do it when I next get up, I promise. What I do think is ill thought through is that Dumbledore was relying on Snape to give Harry that last piece of information that he was the Horcrux that was never made. But once Snape had fully gone over to the dark side, how was he meant to safely give Harry that bit of information? Like, that's a bit of a risk, that he would find Harry and give that bit of information, which is so fucking unbelievable in book 7 that he comes across him as he lays dying. But don't worry, it's not the killing curse, so he dies instantly. He's bleeding out from a snake bite, so he's got time to give over the memories. Like, there's so much that could go wrong with that bit of the plan. That's a really bad plan.
No, it's convenient.
Yes. The next voice note is from Howler.
Hi everyone, love this podcast. My comment really isn't about book 6. But it is something that I've been thinking about more and more since watching all of Ted Lasso in about 24 hours.
Love it.
Massive spoiler alerts for anyone who hasn't seen Ted Lasso, but there's character called Nate, and he reminds me very strongly of Peter Pettigrew. They have a very similar arc, i.e. they're kind of the weaker members of their societal group. They're initially picked on, and then they fall in with the person that's got the ick factor. In Peter Pettigrew's case, that would be like James and Sirius. And he becomes very rapidly obsessed with this person, probably the same way Peter Pettigrew would have been rapidly obsessed with James and Sirius. We saw in Snape's flashback memory that Pettigrew literally hangs on James' every word, claps for him every time he makes a catch with the snitch. He's a real sycophant. And that's kind of how Nate acts with the main character, Ted Lasso. But then when constant praise, validation and attention isn't given, the character Nate very quickly sours and ends up eventually betraying Ted Lasso. Not quite to the same extent as Peter Pettigrew does to James and Lily, but I wonder whether those motivations will be the same thing that drives Peter Pettigrew, that wanting respect, knowing that they are actually a very intelligent person and never getting the appreciation and credit they deserve, and the one person who validates them withdrawing their compliments, not for any meanness or any reason other than just they've got other stuff
going on. I can hear my headphones so loudly still.
And in Ted Lasso, Nate is given a redemption arc. He's given a chance to see what his life is like on the dark side. He's got all these material possessions, but eventually he comes back round. Unfortunately, it does happen it happens alongside him getting into a relationship with a woman who saves his soul. But it does make me think a little bit about Peter Pettigrew. I just think that the two similarities are really cool, and it's given me a whole new perspective on Peter's character. And I just wondered whether anyone else had either seen Ted Lasso and made that connection or thought about things in that way. Anyway, really love the podcast. Really disappointed with JK Rowling. Really hope at one point in her life she realises the error of her ways, because at the moment, a bit like yourselves, all of her work seems a bit tainted to me. Yeah. Keep up the good work, guys. Bye.
Bye. I heard that very last bit.
But did you hear any?
No, nothing else. No. Okay. I could hear when the point had finished by your face changing, and then I'd uncover my ears, I could hear. Really disappointed in JK Rowling. I was like, yeah. You are.
Okay, well, good that you didn't spoil Ted Lasso for Hannah.
To now cover my ears for you to make your reply.
I will work around it. Fucking fantastic comparison that I never in a million years would have connected those two.
Oh my god, I'm so fucking intrigued right now.
And has actually shed a whole new light. I've only watched Ted Lasso through once, I actually need to watch it again, but I feel like this has shed a new light on the character you were mentioning from Ted Lasso for me, because I didn't get it when I watched it. I was like, the fuck is his problem? He's such a dickhead. And actually you putting it that way has made me like, oh, so love that. And yeah, I love that comparison. I love this because I think that it gives me more context on like Peter's potential motivations, because for me it's always like a little bit weak that it's like, why does he betray them, and you know, is it just for power or personal protection or something? But I kind of really like this idea that you brought up about him essentially like not receiving the attention that he has and forming resentment out of it, because I think that that's like a very like human thing that does happen. I don't have a huge amount more to add, and especially trying not to spoil it for Hannah, but yeah, I really love that. That's made me think about both characters very differently.
God, I'm intrigued. The next howler is from Heather.
Hi. So I'm not exactly sure why this occurred to me during book 6 and not book 5, when Neville got injured in the Department of Mysteries, even though at the time I think you did touch on this topic. But do you think if a student has a speech or articulation disorder that it would affect casting spells at all? I don't know, honestly. And of course, we know the intent behind your spells is so important, particularly with nonverbal spells. But does it matter at all with verbal spells? I'm a speech-language therapist in schools, and I wondered, what if a student can't pronounce the initial R sound in ridiculous, or if the student had a frontal lisp and couldn't pronounce a clear S sound in, say, Expelliarmus, would it even matter? Do different accents impact anything? I'm guessing not, so maybe a speech impairment wouldn't either. But if you thought it might matter in any way, then aside from Hogwarts desperately needing a counselor or therapist, they would need at least a part-time speech therapist, and I could be persuaded to volunteer for this position. Just wanted to say I adore your podcast. The first time I read any Harry Potter books was during the pandemic, and wow. I was reading them to my daughter. She was 9 at the time.
Oh.
She started to look for a podcast to listen to along with the books, and she was randomly trying different ones in the car with me one day. She turned on yours, and like 7 seconds in, I went, nope, that's not for you. But it was perfect and really fun for me. So thank you.
Oh my God, I hope one day she does listen. That yeah. is absolutely brilliant. Well done, you.
This is me with my cousin's kids. They're, I think, like 11 and 9. Yeah. And they're constantly like, can we listen yet? I'm like, no.
Great parenting. That's absolute class. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh.
I love it. It took you no time at all.
You're like 7 seconds. These two are trash and my 9-year-old isn't listening to them. Oh, that's amazing that you only read it in the pandemic as well.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, wow. I'm now so stunned by the end of the voice note. I forgot the question.
I can't remember the question.
It's about speech impediments.
Oh, yes.
My instinct is if accents don't affect it, then neither do speech impediments. But it does raise the very interesting question. The reason why I don't think it affects it actually isn't because of accents. It's because non-verbal spells exist. And the majority of spells can be done non-verbally, which means that it's all about the intent behind the word, not the pronunciation of the word itself. And what also feeds into that is we at least theorise that other magic systems in other countries and continents use different language systems, because obviously Hogwarts uses Latin-based words, but obviously if you were to go to whatever made-up J.K. Rowling nonsense she said for the school that covers all of East Asia, they're not going to use Latin root words, but they can produce the same spells. So I think it's more about the intent, and I think the best theory I can come up with that is because of non-verbal spells.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add to that. I completely agree. I'd actually, if anyone knows any fantasy series that actually deal with this, I'd love to read them, because that's not representation that I've seen in fantasy. And as someone that grew up having to have speech therapy because I had a speech impairment, whatever, I'm not sure on the correct term. Like, I would definitely love to see that representation. And I think that's a really interesting concept when fantasy typically is so magic and word linked.
Yeah, and I think I could theorise that why Neville's didn't work in book 5 is because it's more about probably how you as a person normally say it. I think that's probably where the theory of you and the wand being connected come in. So if the wand is used to Neville pronouncing it in a certain way and suddenly he's going stupefy, it's not that it can't be done because he can't say the P's when his nose is broken. It's that the wand and his magic system isn't used to that.
Mm.
But it does raise a very interesting point. And yeah, I would love to read something where my mum is a speech and language therapist. I grew up with a speech and language therapist mum. So it's something we're both very interested in. So if anyone knows of any books that focus on that, then we would be all over that. That's
definitely
fabulous. Thank you, Heather. The next howler comes from Isabella.
Hi, Charlie and Hannah. I have a question that I feel like isn't expanded on enough. In the scene when Harry goes back to the Golden Tree after seeing Tonks outside the room of requirement and says, oh, I think Tonks was in love with Sirius. Why didn't Hermione say, no, they're cousins? Because I'm aware that they are, like, the family tree of the Blacks is basically just a bush. Economically, Sirius is not into marrying his cousins. And neither is Tonks, because she's grown up in this, what can only be described as kind of like a leftist ideal, where she's not into the whole blood purity thing and marrying your cousins. Why didn't Hermione point out the idiocy of that idea by just simply saying, "No, Harry, they're cousins." I can't understand why Hermione Granger, the most logical of the three of them, wouldn't have pointed that out. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Because it's been bugging me for years. Love the podcast so much. Lots of love from Australia.
Oh, I was wondering if you were Australian. It was quite a toned down Australian. Maybe I'm just used to like...
Oi, aye, mate.
Yeah, Cleo. But it...
I like to think that while she didn't verbally point it out, she did give Harry a bitch please cut, like a look, and just because Harry is inobservant as fuck, he just didn't acknowledge it in the narration, but what? She definitely gave him a look like,
no, it's, isn't it Hermione that theorizes that they, oh no, it is Harry. It is Harry.
The whole thing makes no sense. It's like JK just forgot that they're related for a minute. Okay,
but the thing is, I'm really confused because until we read this book, like did the reread, I was absolutely convinced that Hermione did point this out. I had one of those Mandela effect things where I was like, no, yeah, Hermione definitely points that out. And then we got to that point and I was like, what? Shit. What did I... like... I don't know. I genuinely thought she did, and I had misremembered that. So she should have done. She's the logical one.
She is.
But also, no one could have seen the real reason coming, however logical you were, because it's fucking nonsense. So...
yep.
The next howler we have is from Jasmine, who wrote in, so I'm going to be reading it. Hi, Charlie and Hannah. My question is obviously Taylor Swift related. This question does not relate to book 6 in any way. I read it before, but thank you, Jasmine.
Love it.
Well, Taylor Swift era, do you think the Golden Trio are? And what eras are the Silver Trio, Ginny, Neville and Luna? And the remaining eras, what character fits them? Bonus question, if you have time, what Taylor Swift songs do you think fit the Golden Trio? I would love to know.
Can we have thinking time? And I'm going to write mine down. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. Are we taking it in turns per era? Character?
Character, I think.
Okay.
Our camera cut out, so we're about to jump into trying a new alcohol and me doing a shot because I had to get up to reset the camera, and then we'll come back to this question. Neither of us explained that to the camera. So, yeah, we're trying an alcohol and then we'll get back to this question.
So, this smells rancid. Hannah's doing her punishment shot. She asked me if she could do tequila rose, and I was like, no, because that's not a punishment. Nice. This smells absolutely vile.
Okay, so next up on the alcohol train, we have this from Michael. This is, Michael went to a Herculean effort to get us this. Michael tried to send us this, and it smashed in the post. Or something, like it got, he got like a return to sender, but it never even got returned to him. So presumably it smashed. And he sent another one. And bless him, I also gave him Neil's office address as the only like neutral safe address I had at that point. We're sorting something more permanent than that. And Neil, the post, it got delivered at a weekend. So Neil just got handed a bottle on like a Monday morning, and Neil was like, this makes sense. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from Michael, and it's pomegranate wine. It says store sideways. I haven't been doing that. She's off.
Weird. What? Nowhere near as bad as it smells.
Oh, you're right. It does smell a lot. I like it. It tastes thick. And heavy.
You.
Tastes thick and heavy.
I don't hate that.
No.
I hate the smell.
I quite like it. As I was saying, Harry has somewhat childish teenagery emotions.
Yes.
And I feel like Fearless Taylor has childish teenage emotions. She feels everything very strongly. And so does Harry. And also the song Change is very Harry coded.
Yeah.
And Harry's still just like a young country boy trying to find his place.
Yeah.
And that's why Harry is fearless.
I think Harry is Midnights because you're on your own, kid. and Antihero and Karma. And I just also feel like Midnight's just suits Harry.
Sure, yeah. Aesthetically.
Yeah. He's a nighttime guy. Shall I go first for Ron?
Yes.
Red because he's ginger.
Speak now.
Nice.
Because Ron is a dramatic baby.
Yes.
And can never keep his emotions in check. And Taylor certainly couldn't keep her emotions in check during Speak Now.
Hermione?
Reputation.
Same.
Yay! Reputation is so Hermione coded. Yeah,
but I really went between Lover and Midnights as well for her.
Oh, I never thought about Lover for her. I did consider Midnights.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, Reputation is so Hermione coded because it's all about like getting revenge and being cool. But underneath it, I'm gonna soften. I'm in love with a boy.
Yeah.
It's so Hermione coded.
Ginny, Lover.
1989.
Ooh.
I think really debated Lover for Ginny. I was very close.
She's a massive romantic. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pining.
Yep.
I'll marry you with paper rings. Like, yeah. She's down bad.
I think I was thinking later era Ginny, like book five, book six, super fun Ginny, 1989, Welcome to New York. Like, I'm just going to have fun with my friends. Fuck what everyone thinks. I'm the coolest girl.
Yeah.
Neville?
1989.
Debut.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I see Neville as a basic bitch pop girly. I think he wants those high energy, super fun, yep, dancey songs.
I see that.
Like, he loves dancing. We know this.
He does love dancing. Mine is purely based on I'm just a girl trying to find my place in this world, tied together with a smile. He notices things about people around him, but no one notices him. He's just trying to find his place. He doesn't fit in anywhere.
Mm.
He's a debut girly.
Yeah. I also thought Bad Blood when he gets petrificus totalist.
Totalist. Luna.
I cheated. I put two eras because Folklore and Evermore to me are so similar.
I just put Folklore, but it's
she's a cottagecore girly.
She thinks about things so deeply. Seven is Luna. Like, come on.
Okay.
So the remaining eras, you bundled them together, but Evermore, I've given to the Marauders. Evermore is so Marauders coded to me.
Yeah. I see that.
Mostly champagne problems, deck the halls that we once walked through. My remaining eras are Red, which I gave to Lavender, because she would definitely write Red about Ron being a prick.
As she should.
Lover, I assigned to Bill and Fleur.
Yeah.
And Midnights, I assigned to Dumbledore.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep, that fits really well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Gave Dumbledore debut.
Why?
Because I think he absolutely would be like a fun country girly.
He would.
He would also...
The songs fit
him. He would be like an OG Swiftie as well. You know he was straight on that bandwagon.
Yeah. But I can't imagine him being like, on the outside looking in.
I can.
Okay, fair enough.
Fearless, I gave to Lavender.
Lovely, yep.
And
weird how we use the same characters to fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Speak Now, I gave to Molly.
Oh, great. Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, better than Revenge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
she's like... romantic but also a misogynist.
Thanks, Jasmine. That was great.
I really enjoyed that.
Next howler is from JJ.
Hello, Goblet of Wine and listeners alike. I'm JJ. Hi. You met the London meetup, which I realise is quite a long time ago now.
Yes.
And I just wanted to ask, in the Half-Blood Prince, there's in the bit where Harry and Dumbledore, about to say Voldemort there, the bit where Harry and Dumbledore go to the lake to get the Horcrux, and Dumbledore has to cut his arm so yep. the blood can open the wall. And I just wondered, how much blood did he need to spill? Because it said his blood splattered on the wall. And that seems like quite a lot of blood. But could you just take, like, a pinprick and just kind of, like, spread it on the wall? Would it open then? Or does it actually have to weaken you? Because that is what Dumbledore said. And I did mind that pinprick bit, by the way. That's probably what you felt like before you had video podcasts. Anyway, just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Love the pod. Bye.
JJ, I've got to say, you are an excellent speaker. I would look into doing, like, some sort of public speaking debating. Yeah. Like, you speak so well. And, yeah, thank you for coming to our picnic as well.
Yeah, it was so really lovely to meet you.
I agree with Dumbledore that it's got to debilitate you, because why else would Voldemort do it? But that does raise the question of what level is a debilitating level. Is it based on the person? Because a small amount of blood to a child, such as yourself, JJ, is more blood relatively than like Hagrid, you know?
Yeah.
So like, is it based on the person?
So they actually kind of tackle this in Buffy, which I fucking love. Skip forward a bit if anyone's worried about season 7 Buffy spoilers.
Am I worried about season 7 Buffy spoilers?
You'll never watch it. And also, it's not like that big a spoiler, okay. But there's like essentially the portal to hell that a like big evil demon is trying to open. So it kind of like possesses and tricks someone into sacrificing their friend to get enough blood to open the seal. Only the friend that they pick is really short. So there's not enough blood. So they murder their friend and it doesn't work because he was so small he didn't have enough blood.
This is what I mean. When Dumbledore was like, oh, my blood's much more important, it's actually because Dumbledore's really tall and Harry's a short king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harry wouldn't have had enough blood. That little pinprick that Dumbledore gave was actually just all of Harry's blood. Harry is severely anemic.
All right, the next howler is from Katie.
Hi, Hannah and Charlie. My name is Katie. I'm calling in from Edinburgh, where I live with my husband, who is from the north of Ireland. Oh. We both have a lot of feelings about the only specific Irish character in the series, Seamus Finnegan, being yes, the one who constantly blows shit up. I mean, in the final movie, he is literally tasked with blowing up a bridge. And all of this is taking place in the early to mid-90s. Which was the middle of the Irish Troubles. Like, yes, can you imagine what Seamus was going through? Imagine going to the 1994 Quidditch World Cup final. Ireland wins. It's a huge lift for this country that's really going through it. Only for that to be derailed by a group of violent, mostly British, domestic terrorists. Like, if I'm Mrs. Finnegan, I don't want my son living in a dorm the next year with a boy who is in, as far as she knows, unsettled, violent English kid who showed up with a classmate's dead body a few months earlier. There's just a lot that family is going through in this series, and to me, this is just one more example of J.K. Rowling's stereotyping, really missing the mark in a lot of places. Obviously, I think this is less egregious than the Cho Chang of it all, but it still sucks. And shout out to Seamus for still showing up, still fighting, and still being a good friend to the very end. Thanks for the podcast, you guys.
Thank you, Katie. I had never considered the fact that Harry Potter is canonically 90s, therefore set. I honestly somehow had never considered that. I think we've talked a lot about how it's canonically 90s, but we've never actually connected that with real world 90s events that was going on. I mean, we've joked about Princess Diana being alive, but never the actual social events. Not social, that's not the right word.
It was a real social occasion.
Event, you know, this. Not the actual events that were going on. I do think, and I'm not defending J.K. Rowling here because she had final sign off, but I do think it's the films that are egregious about Seamus blowing up stuff, because I don't believe any of that is in the books, or it's one thing where he accidentally sets something on fire when he's trying to turn vinegar into wine.
Yeah.
And they took that and ran with it. So I actually think not to defend J.K. Rowling because she should have had final sign-off and a lot of other people were involved in the process, but that is a film thing.
Yeah.
But my God, are the optics on it fucking awful, and the fact no one stepped in and said anything.
Especially because, I mean, it's the same thing as the anti-Semitic goblins. It's like, it got pointed out and all they do is double down on this shit.
Exactly.
That's what gets me about it, is it's like, I could forgive it if it was done once and then someone pointed it out and they were like, oh shit, we did not think of that.
I'm an idiot.
But it was pointed out and then they did it again and then it was pointed out and then they did it again. Yeah.
But yeah, the films really, really double down on it. Like, yeah, to the point with the bridge thing, which is a cute callback uncontextually if it's not an Irish character.
Yeah.
The only Irish character that we have, which, by the way, Hogwarts is meant to be serving the entirety of the British Isles, so there should be a lot more Irish characters running around. But yeah, now I kind of want to read the books more, considering, like,
yeah,
politically and just in general what was going on in the 90s, because that's a very good point.
New Labour.
Yikes. Well, we have talked about that.
Yeah.
Okay, the next howler is from Clara, who has written in the Spinner's End chapter, right at the beginning, before they reach Snape, the Black Sisters murder a black cat. No, they don't. They murder a fox. I'm wondering if that's a country translation difference, because foxes are British. Immediately, I'm very interested in this question, which has been known for a symbol of a lot of superstition in witchcraft, as well as examples of noble households or royalty. Do you think this ties to the next two books? Maybe an omen, act of foreshadowing. What you've done here, Clara, has raised a much more interesting translation question.
I'm going to really laugh if this is this person trying to Diana Gate us back.
Oh my God, what if they're Diana Gating us back? I'm going to get up and get my book in about 30 seconds. Harry Potter Wiki lists it as a fox. It's definitely a fox in our text. I believe that perhaps this has been translated in other countries' texts, because I'm now wondering what countries have foxes.
But the thing is, why would that? Because they might not have foxes, but they surely know that foxes exist.
They're found throughout most of North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia, as well as parts of North Africa.
It's set in the UK, and people know that foxes exist.
Are foxes only in the UK? No, foxes are found in almost all cities across Europe and North America.
Clara, are you trying to Diana Gate us back? We are refusing to answer this.
Je refuse.
Until you give us proof.
I want proof about the black cat thing.
Yes, please.
Send me your proof or I'm not replying. It's a great theory. It's a great theory about superstition, but I'm not replying until I get proof. Thanks, Clara. Okay, the next howler comes from Cupio? Raquel. You can tell me if I said that wrong.
Aloha, ladies. So my name is Ku'u Ipo,
and
plot hole that I've noticed in 6, and I noticed it once I read 7, I remembered it, is the impenetrableness of the cloak. So when they're on the train to Hogwarts, Draco's able to curse Harry while he's under the cloak up in the baggage area. And then the second time is when Harry and Dumbly are up on the tower and he's under the cloak and Dumble is able to charm him or curse and try, I guess, charm him, so that he can't move. So I just wanted to know your thoughts on what you think about the penetrationness of this cloak. Okay, love you, bye!
Oh my God, I have never noticed that, and now I feel like a fucking idiot.
I just got distracted by the amount of times you said penetration.
You did say penetration a lot in that voice note.
That's my contribution. I'm done. I've made a dick joke. I'm out of here.
That is a fantastic point. And yeah. I think raises some of the frustrations with book 7, which, despite the fact that she had all this time to set it up, the wand law changes in book 7, or she tries to retcon it to be stronger than it was originally. And you're right, also the cloak is like, oh, but yours is the true cloak because it can do XYZ. But you're absolutely right that Draco jinxes Harry in it, and so does Dumbledore. And I almost can understand Dumbledore, because maybe he's such a powerful wizard and it's not a spell of ill meaning. It's like, but yes.
I like to think that actually Harry's just such a dumbass that just his feet or like his elbow are just sticking out.
Well, they are, because Draco spotted him because of a flash of white trainer.
And then there's just been his foot visible the entire time. Does a cloak, what do you look up it if he's
I've
on top of something?
I've always wondered this about the invisibility cloak. It is not an invisibility bubble.
It's not like a morph suit, like, no. You know, the,
it must be massive though to fit 3 13-year-olds under it. Like, they keep saying, oh, it's really hard for all three of them to fit under it in book 7. That still makes it huge.
But yeah, so I like to think he's just actually really bad at wearing it and doesn't realise that just various limbs are poking out. And a lot of the time, like, Hermione and Ron just, like, humour him.
Yeah.
But that's how he's able to be cursed, because he's just not actually fully under it.
But yeah, some of the objects in book 7 are retconned to... Would you stop it?
Has it got the flop on?
It's got the flop on. Some of the objects in book 7 are retconned to be, like, the one thing... It's good. It's really good. If you'd set it up better.
Yeah. It's suddenly so extreme with the disarming bullshit.
Yeah, that's what frustrates me about it. It could have been so good.
Yeah.
If you'd done the work better. Because it is good.
Mm-hmm.
The next howler is from Mark.
Hello, ladies. This question is coming to you live from the Magic Kingdom in Florida, where I'm enjoying a lovely holiday with my sister after spending the last 3 months working at a special needs summer camp in Virginia. In fact, the following question is all about a similar topic. As someone who, back in the UK, works as a TA at the SEN unit of my local secondary school, it's very noticeable that Hogwarts has no sort of unit established there. And as someone who is on the autistic spectrum, I'm not sure I would be able to cope at Hogwarts, especially during OWLs and NEWTs, without any sort of support. And so, after that long-winded introduction, this is my question. How would you establish a special education needs unit at Hogwarts, and what would it include? Thank you.
Well, Mark, you need to be a presenter.
Yes.
I'm voting for Mark as a TV presenter. You've got every vote that's coming your way. That was incredible.
That was great.
Oh, gosh.
So, I mean, obviously we're not experts on this. No. I mean, I'm dyslexic. My sister was also a TA for a SEN, or that is it, SEN, isn't it? department. But yeah, we're definitely not experts on this, but it's definitely an interesting question. Let me think. I mean, you know, the immediate first start is that Hogwarts definitely should have therapists working around the clock.
The second point, just assess the needs of the students and stop making them, you know, all do the same thing, like read off the bloody blackboard.
Yeah, maybe don't have moving staircases. Just a thought. How the fuck do students in wheelchairs get around? Quills? What the fuck?
Yeah.
No,
pens,
no quills.
Pens were invented for a reason. Cut the quills out. Yeah, also, you have magic. Why are you using a blackboard? You could do something where, like, why aren't you, like, writing on something and it appears in front of the pupils? Like, you could do that, right?
Yeah.
You could have some sort of, like, magicking thing where it appears in front of them and then, oh, wow, look at that. Making it easier to read. Yeah. Basically, Mark, there's so much that could be done.
Yeah.
Better at Hogwarts. I've never seen basically a school less set up to
everything.
Be SEN
Get
compliant.
Get Ofsted in there and shut it down.
Shut that place down.
Yeah.
Next, we have Maeve.
Hi, girls. I'm Maeve, and I had a question.
Good audio.
You. I'm going into my GCSE year, except I'm in Ireland, so we call it the junior year, but it's basically the same thing. And
good luck.
I was wondering if you had any advice for me. Anything about studying or reducing stress or the social aspect of the year would be really, really helpful. Thank you so much for making this podcast. It's so amazing. Keep doing what you're doing. Bye.
Bye.
I mean, we have to say it, even though you'll have heard it a million times before, your exam results literally don't matter and will never be brought up again. But that only helps so much. I think for me, something that I massively regret is that I didn't know that, like, study YouTube was a thing. And yeah. Our school was not very good at, like, teaching us revision and learning techniques. And then since I've learned about all kinds of things, like the, the note-taking system, what's it called? Begin with C. It's like a American university beginning with C.
Colorado.
Can't remember. There's, begins with C, something like note-taking system, which is where you have like a line down the page and things like that. Also, the most important thing when it comes to memorization is that you have to keep going back to things. Like the more time, if you like wait 2 weeks, go back to the information, wait 2 weeks, go back to the information. I'd really recommend on YouTube. Oh, I'm now just forgetting what. 1 second, Hannah, you go.
Yeah, in terms of study techniques, I would say there's so many more resources available now about different types of study techniques. Whereas when we were young and youthful, we just got told the way that our teachers wanted to do it. Like, I got told I'd be put in detention if I didn't make flashcards, because that's the way one teacher found revision worked. Flashcards work so well for some people, but not for others. If you've got a dickhead teacher like that, then sorry, I did. But hopefully your teachers will let you choose whichever way works best for you. And it's really important finding that, because everyone is different learners, and also it might be different for different subjects. For some subjects, like English, I had closed book exams. So to try to remember quotes, I would put them to the tune of songs, because I can remember lyrics at the drop of a hat, but I struggle to remember other things. So I used to put the quotes I needed to learn for English to songs. So there's so many different revision techniques, and I'd say find the one that works for you. But I would also say, in terms of the social aspect, that as we, your GCSE results are, or the year you're going into is important in terms of, you know, you need a minimum to get into the next stage of education and things like that.
I don't even think it's like that now, though, because you have to stay in education.
Yeah, but to study for some subject. But yeah, it's... And it's also different in Ireland to England. But don't study so much. It's a detriment to everything else. I remember, even at GCSE level, turning down like plans and worrying about birthday parties and things like that, because I was like, oh, I'm meant to be revising. And it's mad the pressure I put on myself looking back. And like, I'm glad on one hand I had that work ethic, but on the other hand, it's like, come on, it's not that deep, it's not the end of the world.
It's also important to have breaks. You literally need to have breaks or your brain stops being able to take in the information.
Yeah, I was actually like, if I don't revise for 8 hours a day, then I haven't done a good enough job. And you put yourself under so much pressure. And remember that those lighter moments of hanging out with your friends, and also group studying is not slacking off. I revise best sometimes with a group of friends, where we were testing each other, throwing information back and forth. And I think some people are like, teenagers can't do that because they'll distract each other. No, do it. Have a revision sleepover. You should be having fun whilst learning. There's nothing wrong with that.
I remember stuff the best when I teach it to someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Ali Abdal on YouTube. He's amazing. He's a doctor turned YouTuber, and he's very up on like productivity techniques, and like he went to Oxford. He's like all about how to like take in and remember information. So he has a bunch of really, really useful videos on the topic. But yeah, I mean, it just does not matter a huge amount, let's be honest. Get the grades you need to go to the next step in life, but don't stress about things. Like, I got pretty bang average results, and I'm doing good for myself. Like,
it also helps remember, if there's a subject you don't like and you're really stressing out about it, as Charlie said, do the thing you need to do to get the pass grade. But if you know you're not going to take that subject further and you're never going to use it again, don't lose sleep over it, because it's just do what you need to do to get the pass grade.
Sometimes you had to prioritise as well. Like in A-levels, for the first year, I then had a subject I absolutely knew I was dropping.
Oh, same.
So when it came to whether I revised for that, or revise for the subjects I was keeping and got a better grade, I obviously revised for the ones that I was keeping, because why would I try hard at something I'm dropping anyway when I could do better in the ones I'm actually going to follow through on?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, revise with your friends, make social fun of it. Like, you're young and should be having fun. And learning things. The next howler is from Megan.
Hi, Charlie and Hannah. It's your favorite Canadian Meg. I just want to say thanks, as always, for the podcast, not only for the welcome distraction and laughs, but also for the incredible community of friends it's connected me to through the Discord.
Aww.
You talked about how you love the chapters that are from a non-Harry perspective. If you could have additional chapters in Half-Blood Prince or any other book that are from the point of view of a character or situation that's not Harry, what would they be?
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant question. My first instinct is Draco.
My first instinct was Princess Diana.
Well, obviously, because we just watched the film where they added in scenes from Draco's perspective, and I would love how powerful those written scenes could be of Draco trying and failing with all the different attempts and the cabinet. But Harry doesn't know all that information, so the reader has access to that extra information. I think that could be so, so powerful.
I think Slughorn would be a great one as well.
Yeah,
to like see from his point of view why he doesn't want to give over the information.
Yeah, I also think just in general, there'd be so much value in having chapters from the adults and chapters from the children and having that split. So you kind of get a more zoomed out look at the war, because the brilliance of Harry Potter is how it's about war, but because it's set in a school, it only affects part of their lives. But imagine the flip side of that if you were having chapters from switching between Bill and Molly and Lupin and all these other people and seeing the real adult effects of war.
I think that's something that could have been so strong for the last film. Like, because they split it into two in a way where it was like, okay, you've just stretched out the plot.
Yeah,
but actually you could have shown it from all the different sides of the war. Especially because everyone kind of ended up like separated, like,
yeah.
So
if you're going to split it into two, add value with it.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
The next
amazing
howler,
question.
Yeah, such a good question. The next howler is from Niana.
Hey, this is Niana. I'm
such a good
big
voice.
Fan. I met you guys at the Hyde Park meetup. Super nice to see you and hopefully see you again in real life sometime soon.
Yes.
Maybe what I have to say is a little bit premature because I think you'll probably talk about it, but it's kind of a general book point about secret keepers. I think a big plot point of the series is that Sirius made Peter Pettigrew be the secret keeper because Voldemort would never expect it. And I don't really get why, because I think on the website Pottermore, which I know is a bit bullshit, but you know, it's what we have. I think there's a point that you can't like force someone to give up their secret keeper secret, so you can't like torture someone until they tell you. They have to sort of voluntarily tell you, and Sirius was never going to voluntarily tell Voldemort, or of his own volition tell Voldemort, or accidentally tell him. You know, he's way too good for that, and he's way too close. So I actually don't understand that at all. And I also kind of don't understand why you wouldn't just always have Voldemort, I mean always have Dumbledore, sorry, I did the thing, as your secret keeper.
Shot.
Like, surely he's the one that like Voldemort is scared of, and he's never going to approach him and be like, hey, give me the address to a house. Or, you know, I don't really get why you can't be your own secret keeper. Like, why isn't James his own secret keeper for the house? I just have no idea why it's Peter Pettigrew, to be honest. And I think the secret keeper thing comes up a lot in the final book, because they all end up being like secret keepers for Grimmauld Place, which obviously makes it really weak, and Bill is the secret keeper for his own house in Shell Cottage. And to be honest, I know this is not super relevant to book six, but I just want to get it out the way because I really think it's kind of a very stupid plot point that Sirius made Peter take on that role.
Yeah.
Anyway, big fan of the pod and hopefully see you soon.
Yay. Oh my God, Niana, the fact that I'm pretty sure I could hear the Oxford church bells in the background of that, I was literally like, oh my God, what is happening? I love this.
Yeah, this is such a good point. It really does make sense and it's so flimsily explained away. And I think that something that would have been a great addition, and maybe kind of there's the first reason given of, oh, you know, he didn't trust himself because of his upbringing and blah blah blah, but you know, that's bullshit. I would have liked Harry to find out later on, probably like after his death or something, that the reason Sirius changed it was because he was gonna essentially go on a suicide mission to try and kill Voldemort to protect Lily and James, and he knew if he died that more people would become the Secret Keeper.
Right.
I think that would have been a great twist if it's like that night he was planning on going after Voldemort. I think it really suits Sirius with his like impulsiveness and recklessness. And I think that it's definitely something that he would do for James, to be like, oh God, like this is not a long-term solution. That's not good for him, for Lily, for the baby. Like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this into my own hands and go after him. But I know that I can't be the Secret Keeper when I die.
That's a really good point about death. I hadn't considered that.
And I think it would be like very brutal for Harry to learn that after Sirius had died.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah. Because I agree it's stupid and it's a plot hole. I think the main issue where it comes up is J.K. Rowling again shooting herself in the foot in book 7. Like, I really like book 7, but my God, does she... I'm going to use the word lampoon again. Lampoon herself multiple times. Mm-hmm. In making Bill the Secret Keeper was a really stupid thing to write in, because it adds so many plot holes. Like, why would you do that? Why not add a plot point about who's Bill going to choose? He's got so many brothers. Who's he going to...
Yeah.
Is it a bit of a thing about who he trusts the most versus who's the most likely to live? Who's the less likely to be targeted? That could be quite cool. But no, to make Bill his own Secret Keeper is... stupid. And also, why not make Dumbledore the Secret Keeper of everything? I suppose that makes him a very high risk target, because we do know when someone dies as a Secret Keeper, everyone who knows it becomes Secret Keeper. So I guess you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
In one old man.
But essentially she ruined it for herself by making... She did this so many times in book 7. It's a real shame, but by making Bill his own Secret Keeper. But also, if the information cannot be tortured out of you, then it makes no sense for this last minute switch. Like, I guess the point they were trying to make is, the information can't be targeted out, can't be brought out of you, but everyone would just assume Sirius is the Secret Keeper, so he would be targeted in other ways. But that then makes him seem like a coward to make it switch to Peter. It kind of just adds a layer of protection to himself.
Yeah, I prefer my theory.
I like your theory a lot, because in my head, Sirius would never do that. He'd be like, great, I'm put up more risk, do it. I want to be put up more risk. I love James and Lily. The next howler is from Ravneet.
Hello, Hannah. Hello, Charlie. I hope you're having a really good day. Sorry, my chair's a bit squeaky. So I wanted to talk about Merope. I know you guys really don't like that pronunciation. It's how I've always done it. I'm really sorry.
It's okay.
And the reason for that is because it actually comes from the Greek mythological character Merope. She is the youngest of the seven daughters of the Titan Atlas. Atlas is the guy who like holds the sky on his shoulders, and she is one of the Pleiades, which is a constellation of seven stars, but basically you can't always see the seventh the whole time. And Merope married a mortal man, and she is ashamed of herself for marrying this mortal man, which is why she's the faintest star. You can't always see her. The connection, obviously, to the books, to bring it back to Half-Blood Prince, is that we learn she's shamed. Merope in the books is shamed by her father and brother for falling in love with the Muggle. And it's kind of a similar thing of Merope is a supposedly considered a higher being, and she falls in love with this just normal guy. I think Marvolo calls Tom Riddle filthy or something, and they kind of keep her hidden away from the world because they're ashamed of her, which I think is very similar to the idea of Merope in the Pleiades being the star you can't always see. So I don't know, I just thought that was interesting, and I hope you think so too. Okay, thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
You too. This is my second reminder of the week that I need to learn more about Greek mythology.
This is the exact reason we do this episode for me. Fucking hell, that was... Oh my god.
I love British mythology, and it's something that I spend a lot of time like reading and listening to podcasts, and no, like I say, not nearly enough time on Greek, but like no time, like not since like primary school when we learned about it. And it's so fucking fascinating and interesting. And the first reminder this week was you telling me about
a book. Just finished Circe by Madeline Miller. I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Circe. This is what I'm pronouncing that wrong as well. And I adored it. By the way, one of you messaged me saying, read Song of Achilles. I was like, I know. But I adored Circe. But my main, not criticism, but my main point in finishing it was I would have enjoyed it a lot more if I had remembered and known more about Greek mythology, because I haven't read anything since like primary
school.
This was
when I read His Dark Materials. Obviously I loved it, but I was like, I feel like it would have added a lot if I understood more about Christianity.
Yeah, Christianity and the Bible. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Because like I had obviously, I think I mentioned it on the podcast. I hope I did. But obviously like Marvolo is drawn from Marvolio in Shakespeare, and that it's like the root of evil and things like that, and there's that connection. But I did not know that, I'm now going to say Merope because we were wrong, is the son of Atlas and marries a mortal. That's
good.
That's so good.
Fair play, JK. Fair play.
Fair play, JK. She does do names well.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's good. I really need to get into, all historical reference, all Greek, all Roman, English mythology.
She
fucking
pulls love
from
mythology,
everything, and it's good.
Yeah.
Wow. That. Thank you so much for letting us know that. That's absolutely fantastic. I was about to say fabulous, and then I switched to fantastic, so it came out as fabtastic.
I like it. Change approved.
Fabtastic. Makes me sound like one of those posh knobheads, though. Like, fabtastic. Mm-hmm. This next howler is from Rob, who says, hi, Charlie.
I love that this is written and formatted like a letter.
It's an email. I just copied and pasted it. But you're right. Hi, Charlie and Hannah. Hope you're both keeping well. Just wanted to send an email saying I love listening to the podcast. Can't get enough. You two have such great chemistry and are a joy to listen to. I've been listening a lot recently during night feeds with my son, and both have been keeping me sane. You both have been keeping me sane. Would love to come to another one of your picnics. Gutted I couldn't make the last one. Question, you may have already answered this one. Which character do you loathe? And not in a love to hate them sort of way. A character you can't put up with when you see their name on the page. All the best and keep up the great work, Rob Stevenson. I've got to say, I really love the amount of messages we get from any parents who say that they listen to us with night feeds and breastfeeding and things like that. It really makes me happy, because I didn't realise... It's something that I've only realised later on in this podcast, because we started it 5 years ago and I didn't really know anyone with kids, and now I know a lot more people with kids, how endless and exhausting and how many hours are just being up alone feeding your young child. And as I've said, I'm worried about what we're subliminally putting into your child's heads.
Hopefully they have headphones.
But also, yes, but also I am really glad that we're there for that, because I've now learned how much that can be, and that makes me so happy. So thank you. And loathe in a not hate to loathe way, because I would say obviously Umbridge is the best written villain ever.
Excellent.
But it doesn't mean that I can't put up with them with their name on the page, because I respect her as a villain. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, which one do I loathe more in a personal written sense?
It's so hard, because obviously, like, yes, but then I love it as a character.
That's the thing. I love Greyback as a character. But I think I get such disgust from Greyback.
Yeah.
That I do dread every time his name is on the page, because I'm like, oh, God.
Hermione's date. McLagan.
Oh, good one. Yeah, McLagan.
Definitely.
Oh, God, he's
definitely
insufferable.
We all know McLagan.
We all know McLagan. I was thinking Pansy as well.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's good. Thank you, Rob. That's great. Next one is from Savian. Savian?
Hello there, Hannah and Charlie. It's me, Savian. I am American, and I love your podcast. And this is my Half-Blood Prince Howler. And this has more to do with the movie than the book. Like, Half-Blood Prince is my favorite book, but they massacred it in the movie. And I'm sure you probably agree. But what are your thoughts on the movie? Like, the main villain of the series literally has 4 minutes of screen time in the movie. Lavender Brown, who is not important at all, has more screen time than the main villain of the series in this movie. Oh my God. Why? Who made this movie? It's bad. It's just very, very bad. Also, this is just a little thought that I had. Moaning Myrtle is in this book? Like, you literally, I feel like she has one line and it's like, murder! Murder in the bathroom! And then Snape comes in and is like, what just happened here, Mr. Potter? Did you do this? Give me your book. Go retrieve it. And also, the savagery from Harry in this book, like, there's no need to call me Sir Professor. Oh, mic drop! And then also, like, the... it's a nickname, and then Snape has a comeback like, I know what a nickname is. I don't know, I just thought it was funny. Anyway, that's my howler for today.
Goodbye. So, Savian, thank you for being the only one to commit to the bit as a howler.
If our film episode didn't record, let's just upload that. Yeah. Just that.
Because we didn't even mention that in our film review.
Yeah.
That's come out before this, but you guys won't have heard it by the time you sent in the howlers. We didn't even mention that. Yeah. Adult Voldemort isn't in it. Child Voldemort has, like 6 minutes of screen time. You're absolutely right. But what we did mention is it's a rom-com.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a tonally bizarre rom-com.
Yeah.
Great impressions.
I love your energy. Impeccable.
Thank you. Yeah, you will hear all our thoughts, hopefully.
Oh, God.
On film 6 in the last episode, which is that it's totally fucking bizarre.
Yes.
The next howler is from Tom. Loving the podcast. One thing that stuck out to me in Slughorn's memories was Slughorn saying that Tom Riddle could become Minister for Magic. Why didn't he do that then? You said this, I believe. He already had Death Eaters or followers, so he could have caused a crisis as Lord Voldemort and as Tom Riddle become Minister for Magic and manipulate the systems to be more pure blood orientated. Also, if he wanted people to turn against Muggleborns, why not create an incident where Muggleborns, I enjoy that something has corrected all these Borns to Burns, Muggleburns, are the aggressors and can turn Wizarding World opinion against them. Looking forward to hearing your views, Tom.
Tom, I'm scared of you.
Yeah, Tom, Jesus Christ. What you've the got fuck? Villain energy. Jesus.
Are you a politician? Do you work for the Tory party?
Yes, these are all very smart ideas, but fuck
this,
me.
I mean, we discussed it. It would have taken him less time to just become Minister for Magic than it did doing it his way. He would have lived longer.
Yep.
Like, it makes no sense. Like, the thing is, you know, the Tory government turns people against the working class, against immigrants, yada, 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 because their mates control the media. And it's like a secular thing of, we'll give you tax breaks, etc., if you post this in the media to turn people against these minorities to keep us in power and keep the heat off us and blame them for the issues that we're causing. And it just becomes this circular, everyone is licking their own asses, each other's asses, in this big, like, secular human centipede situation. Not sure where this point was going.
No, I'm scared.
So why couldn't Voldemort have done that? Just, you know, at the end of the day, they're like one massive newspaper is government owned.
Yeah,
like he would have had essentially a complete monopoly on the Wizarding media. He literally could have indoctrinated them against Muggleborns so easily.
The idea of doing an incident where Muggleborns are the aggressors is genius. I think.
Yeah, I'm really scared of this person.
This is where I think. It's not that the books fall down slightly. This is where I think our own
podcast falls down slightly in that we are analysing this from an adult perspective who have read adult novels. And all these ideas are amazing, but at the end of the day, Voldemort is a simplistic big bad.
Yeah.
And like, yes, there are more complex elements of the book, but at the end of the day, it is YA.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean that you can't have these complex elements. You 100% can, but I think some of these ideas, I absolutely fucking want to read them, but in an adult book that has full-on adult themes.
Absolutely.
And that's where analysing this as an adult falls down slightly, because we expect too much from it.
Yeah.
But oh my God, I want to read this.
Yes, definitely.
It's absolutely amazing. And the last howler comes from Vera.
Hi, my name is Vera, and I'm so sorry for my voice. I'm currently sick. My question doesn't really have anything to do with the books you guys just read, but I was wondering if you guys had seen anything about the Marauders movie going on social media right now. Yeah. It's called The Rise of the Order, and as I said, I was wondering if you guys had seen anything about it. Anyway, much love from Sweden. Bye.
I haven't.
No. Look at The Rise of the Order. Oh, yes. I do remember seeing something about people casting for it. It's fan-made. I remember seeing something about casting for it. That's all I've seen. But in general, I'm so for fan-made pieces of art about the series. I know that they're incredibly hard to get through because of copyright issues. But fan-made art is where it's at the moment. Like,
yeah.
Like, I fully believe that you can still find ways to enjoy Harry Potter if you want to, whilst not supporting J.K. Rowling. And there is so much incredible fan-made work out there. Like, fan fiction has taken on... it was already good, but it's taken on a whole new level in the last few years. And I actually read an interesting article recently, which I'll link in the description. I sent it to you, about how there has been a rise in certain... like, basically things like, you know, there was Wolfstar, which was already popular back in the day, but now Jegulous, right? In 2018, there were only 40 pieces of Jegulous fanfiction published. Last year, just between, like, a couple of months span, there was something like 14,000 pieces of Jegulous fanfiction published. And someone was theorising that these much more niche ships are being published because it's so... far removed from J.K. Rowling's work while still being part of the Harry Potter world, that by her coming out in her turfy behavior, she's pushing fans to be more creative in what they're creating about. And I absolutely love that. I think it's amazing, and I think that's not something we can compare to anything else that has happened before. So yeah, I absolutely love the creativity of what fans are creating, and this looks so cool. And also, the Marauders is like, if J.K. Rowling weren't to exist and I could give a production studio money to make one more Harry Potter thing, it would be a Marauders era thing. Like,
I'm amazed they've never done it.
I'm amazed they've never done it.
It's bizarre. The fact they did Fantastic Beasts that no one wanted when everyone has been begging. The fact they're now redoing the main series when Marauders is right there.
Yeah, everyone wants Marauders.
It's crazy.
It's mad to me.
But yeah, I definitely agree. I love fan-made things, and I think it's such a great way. And, you know, not only fan-made fiction, but like, things like us, the podcast, other podcasts, is such a great way for when you can't quite stomach or don't want to support J.K. Rowling anymore, a way to still enjoy this thing. So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, so we're going to keep an eye on that, see what comes of it. And yeah, like, really excited to see where that goes. That's all the howlers.
Woo!
This was so great. I love doing these. I love hearing everyone's opinions.
I kind of wish we could do these more often, but...
yeah.
It's difficult.
It is.
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. And I love hearing real people's voices.
I know. And it's like, you're all so smart. It scares me.
And eloquent.
Me. You're all so smart and eloquent. And we're just here like, great blah, blah, point. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you so much. And that is the end of season six.
One more book left, baby. We're almost there.
We're almost there.
Oh!
Thank you.
I think we should drop the Goblet of Wine album when we finish.
It's
book
what
seven.
Everyone's been wanting. Like
relentless messages. It's every single day.
You have the voice of angels. Please drop.
You
the
are
album.
So talented. I it will go straight to number one. Now. Simon Cowell's in our DMs.
Yeah, Simon. Oh God, endless.
Yeah.
So that's what's coming next for the podcast. No, thank you so much for listening to season 6. The last book!
I'm so excited to do
you
the
know
last
what
book.
We have to decide for the last book? Where the fuck are we going to slot in film 7?
True dat.
True dat.
Boy. Boy.
Give us suggestions when and where we should watch film 7. Do you want it at the end of the series?
Or
do you
where
want
it cuts
midway
off.
Midway through where it cuts off. Please.
That can be the poll.
That's your poll.
Yeah.
Please actually help us because I don't know what's best to do.
Yes. And we will see you at, well, we won't see you. You'll see us unless our camera keeps overheating, in which case you will hear us.
Maybe we should just surround the camera with a bag of ice. Have we considered this? Was that smart?
I fear it would leak.
No, no, no. It's perfectly
okay.
safe.
Hopefully for season 7. We'll have a studio.
Woo, woo. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, bye, lads.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't know why I'm waving. The camera's off.
Smart.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram. We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do. This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Michael, Kylie, Jasmine, Florian, and Ardent.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and our Discord. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye!